morning. Good morning, fabulous crowd and fireside. My name is Sharon and I serve the village's education lead. Gentle reminder to fill out teaching session evaluations for faculty this week. We appreciate that so much. John is mic'd, so you want to do a little test, John?
Test.
Okay, perfect. And when it comes, if you're offering questions or comments, if you could use your playground voice, that would be helpful at the end, because sometimes it's really hard to hear in here. So, and I know John would appreciate that. So, welcome Senator John Marty from Minnesota, from my home state. He's going to be talking about healing healthcare, something that we do. Thank you, John.
Thank you very much, Sharon, and very pleased to be here. And I hope people can see the PowerPoint. I'm only getting used to doing PowerPoints, but I see all the other faculty using PowerPoints. And I had a few the other day, but this is one I've used before, and I added and took out some things. But the title I gave for the whole talk was "Our Healthcare System is Sick. Obamacare Covered More People, but Didn't Address Fundamental Problems and Didn't Make It Affordable. Now the system is going to get even worse." I think that's a prediction, but I think a fair one. "And we can," and I added after adding something today, "and must heal our healthcare system." For a quick background, I'm a state senator from Minnesota. I have been for a very long time, 30 and a half years now, and been to Holden many times and appreciate the chance to talk about the policy and things here. I also will mention, I think I have it somewhere in the PowerPoint, I have a book in the bookstore. I'm not making any money off this because of my job. I feel it's better to not make any, so any proceeds go to Holden Village. It's also, if you don't want to buy the book but you're interested in it, it's actually in many ways easier to read online because all the footnotes are linked automatically and so on. So, and I can, it's just mnhealthplan.org, and you can download it for Kindle or ebook or PDF if you're like me and don't have a Kindle. Anyway, so I added that "and must" because, as we get to, I wanted to start by the thing that gave me the reason to add the "and must," and that is, why does this matter to us? This is something I saw, a cousin of mine sent me this, it was posted on Facebook. Some of you may have seen it. It's a month or two ago. I asked permission from the author of it, and so I'm going to show you a few slides here. Pretty interesting commentary that I think is worth watching. He starts out, "In my experience, Americans help one another. We may disavow community in many places, but it's how we get through our troubles most of the time. I met Shane for the first time in a college comics writing course," hence he's a cartoonist as his friend Shane. "He was soft-spoken, wrote strange stories centered on life in Houston and superheroes, and founded Zine Fest, which was an event dedicated to promoting," this isn't my language, but I assume magazines or online zines, whatever, "mini comics and other forms of small press art. I graduated and left the city, but he and I were still present in each other's lives. We celebrated successes, reposted each other's names, funded one another's Kickstarters. We supported each other as people online do. And yet somehow I miss things." And I don't know if everybody's familiar with GoFundMe. I've seen it many times, people using it to raise money for various causes. You post it and your friends and others can donate online to it. "Somehow I miss things. I knew he had moved. I assumed it was to try something new. So many people seeking a place for themselves after college. Never thought anything of it. I left the city myself because I couldn't afford it. I never knew he was diabetic. I never heard him relate to anyone or talk about the struggle to find medication. Shane left the urban safety net he cobbled together in Texas to help his mother who was dying in Arkansas. Without a job, waiting for ACA insurance to kick in Arkansas, he turned to crowdfunding site GoFundMe to campaign for his insulin while he cared for his mother." That's what the GoFundMe page looked like, a month of insulin, a type 1 diabetic, something I need to stay alive. "He was $50 shy of his goal for over 2 weeks. Many of his friends were unaware the campaign even existed. Shane died, I believe this is this year. Shane died March 18th, complications from type 1 diabetes. His mother passed away 2 days earlier. Since read up on diabetic ketoacidosis, I'm not a medical expert, I don't know if I pronounce it right. Symptoms are horrific: vomiting, abdominal pain, shortness of breath, and confusion. He died in horrible pain. This is healthcare in the United States, a piecemeal system cobbled together from the marketplaces, government grants to clinics, Medicare, Medicaid, private and personal donations, workplace insurance, and on and on. And this is simply a chart of nationally a couple years ago. As you can see, the biggest chunk of it is employer insurance, the way most people get their care. Medicaid and Medicare are huge other chunks of it. Big chunk though is that, as you can see, about a tenth of the population is uninsured. Think of my brother between jobs in rural Maine without health insurance, a state that refused to expand Medicaid. My sister with her heart problems, my spouse with a family history of diabetes. I think of Shane. That's why I added the words "and must" fix healthcare. We can and must fix our healthcare system. This is not an acceptable place for any of us to be. We could wait. I think most of us, we expect the federal government trying to address healthcare in a logical manner is not going to happen. I hope it does. I would keep advocating for that and urge people to do so. But states could move ahead on their own. Matter of fact, I had hoped to move forward this year in Minnesota because the Affordable Care Act this year, 2017, in January, was the beginning of the time when a state could get an innovation waiver to innovate on how they change things. Because the Affordable Care Act applied to every state, if you wanted to do something different, you'd have to get a waiver. Most of the waiver requests that Minnesotans and other states are looking at are little tweaking things here or there. The only things the federal government required under the Affordable Care Act to get one of these waivers, which doesn't guarantee anything, but at least it makes it simpler to get the federal permission you need. You only had to make sure you covered at least as many people as the Affordable Care Act. The benefits had to be at least as good. You couldn't have an insurance that covers cancer and nothing else. And it had to be at least as affordable. I would argue our proposal is all of them. And so because we proposed a Minnesota health plan to deliver universal health care, be the first in the nation. Some other states are working on similar types of things. What's our Minnesota health plan? Oops. I hope this is. Could describe it as Medicare for all, covers everyone over 65 and everybody under age 65 as well. Some of the proposals actually in Minnesota and other states to deal with the crisis in the individual insurance market. Minnesota, that's small, it's only 5%. Over 60% of Minnesotans get their health care coverage through their employer. So it's only a small segment of the population, but to deal with it where the market is totally broken. One of the proposals, well, maybe we should lower the age of Medicare, try and get waiver to do it lower to 55, because you know the more you age, you do that, and I'd say that's a good idea, probably lower it a little further than that, though. And I think what we call our Minnesota health plan would be Medicare Plus. It's all Medicare benefits plus dental, plus long-term care, plus benefits that currently require supplemental coverage, plus no more co-pays or deductibles, which deny a lot of people care. I think it's a surprise to a lot of people when they get close to 65 that Medicare does not cover nursing homes for most people, and that it doesn't cover dental and other things like that. Well, I'm telling you about our health reform we're talking about. Well, haven't we tried this before? What's different this time? Well, Minnesota, in the last 30 years, this is actually an underestimate. When I say a dozen, there have been about 14, and there's a new one starting right now. Health reform task forces. I served on the healthcare transformation task force, the healthcare financing task force, healthcare commission, a whole lot of them, and we work very hard. And we we haven't come up with much. I would argue we're tinkering with a dysfunctional system. My point is, I would suggest that federal and state reforms, including the Affordable Care Act, while it was older in many ways than other reforms, it covered a lot more people. It was largely tinkering with a dysfunctional system. What's tinkering? An attempt to repair, improve something with small changes to fiddling and adjusting with little or no positive effect. I think that's roughly what I'd say we've been doing over all these years. Why do we tinker? Well, we see two problems. We want to increase access. As you saw in the earlier chart, about 10% of the American public does not have any health care coverage. Minnesota, it's actually about 5%. And we want to reduce costs. It's too expensive. Well, the problem, that second one, the health care being too expensive, what's the solution? Let's make it more difficult to get so people use less of it. How do we do that? Well, we started to, you don't go to a doctor, you go to a doctor who is in-network. We have co-pays and deductibles, which keep growing and growing, and deductibles when you have $4,000 deductible, and some people have much more than that. $4,000 deductible, and you don't have $4,000, you're not really getting the care you need. We restrict coverage in terms of all the discussion of the Affordable Care Act, pro and con. I never heard anybody talking about dental care. The only thing it did was it said that plans offer kids have to offer a plan. Insurers offering a plan that covers kids have to offer at least a plan that covers dental coverage. But more and more things, well, insulin used to not be something you had trouble getting. Prior authorization is the one that's hitting a lot of people on that. Insulin used to be not that expensive. The costs have gone through the roof. There's slightly different variations, some of which work much better for people. And for some, prior authorization is where before you perform some procedure, you got to get permission to do it, not from your doctor. Your doctor's the one who would normally do it. Prior authorization means your medical provider has to go and get permission from the insurer to perform something. And lots of types of insulin are now requiring prior authorization. So I don't know anybody who would say a diabetic does not need insulin on an ongoing basis, not to be renewed every 6 months or something. You're going to need it. Yeah. We've done, I would argue, since the 1970s, 40 years of reforms to make healthcare more difficult to get. And it has had an impact. Americans do use a little bit less healthcare, not much, but a little bit less. Even so, we're spending twice what other countries spend on healthcare, and our health outcomes are worse. That raises two questions. First one, I can see saying you don't care about people in some other country, but what kind of a society would want to make it difficult for its own people to get care? What kind of society would say what Chain faced is okay? The other one, the economic question, practical question, we've been working for 40 years to make sure people make it harder for people to get health care, and we're still spending twice as much. It's not working. Maybe we should try a new approach. This is actually a 10-year-old quote, but I'd say it's true more than ever. This was General Mills, vice president, said this about 2007. We tried to design a healthcare system. It didn't work. It couldn't have done better than we did. Why does General Mills have a health vice president who deals with health care? Well, it's their employee benefits. I mean, when you have thousands and thousands of employees that need health care benefits, you got to have someone who's an expert in how you do this. It's not a helpful thing to a business, but they all need to, and I think this quote summarized it pretty well. Need a new model. I suggest we turn to the way we do other things, police and fire protection. Nobody has to apply for new coverage each year. Nobody has deductibles before the fire department shows up. And nobody has to ask if the sheriff will accept their police insurance plan. And once upon a time, we did some of this differently. We didn't always have police and fire departments. Some of the older cities out East Philadelphia and Boston, I think you can see on some buildings, you can still see evidence plaques that said this was fire company number such and such, where they would be buying coverage to a specific fire department. That didn't make a lot of sense. If your building catches fire, or your neighbor's building catches fire, they call in their fire department. Yours being a wood structure next door to it catches fire from it, and well, sorry, that's not their problem. You call your own fire company. But we don't do that. Any civilized, humane society takes care of its people. Universal, we don't talk about this, but we do have universal police and fire coverage in this country. You don't have to qualify. You don't have to pay a deductible. We need to civilize humane society around the same with health and dental care. So we map a new direction. Before you start a trip, you need a map. What are you trying to accomplish? Where are you going? And I suggest when we design a healthcare system, we need to map out our direction, spell out the principles we want the healthcare system to do. We have all the discussion. I want this kind of healthcare. I want this. What are our goals? And this is about 2003, I put together a piece of legislation that would have required our Commissioner of Health, the Republican administration. I'm a Democratic Federal Labor Party member, the other party. Why would I ask our Republican health commissioner to design a healthcare system? All I said was, design a healthcare system that meets these principles, these goals. And I would argue that if you design a healthcare system that does these goals, I'll support it. I don't care what kind of plan it is. First thing is it covers everyone, not 95%, 100%, everybody. Second, cover all medical needs, including dental vision, mental health, prescriptions, alcohol, and drug treatment. Long-term care in Minnesota, 3/4 of the cost of nursing home care in Minnesota is paid for by taxpayers. The biggest single chunk anywhere, and it's true in every state, is Medicaid, which a senior who goes into a nursing home and several hundred bucks a day, and all of a sudden their lifetime savings go away pretty quickly. They end up, in most cases, most people who are not well prepared for expensive retirement end up on Medicaid. But it ought to be covered. 3/4 of the money is already paid by government in Minnesota. And the other quarter of it, we spend huge efforts fighting. People try to hide their assets, shift them to their kids. I think Minnesota looks back 3 years to make sure you're not hiding assets that way. And so the state's spending a lot of resources trying to recover that. People are spending a lot of resources trying to do that. People try and buy long-term care insurance. Our state has efforts in place to incentivize people to buy long-term care insurance. It's a very dysfunctional market. A lot of insurance companies have gone broke trying to cover it. And a lot of times their plans switch on people. We had some people, I knew a couple who bought it in their 50s when it was affordable. But it's like a term life insurance. When you stop paying the premiums, it goes away. They bought it, and 1 year, their premiums, 90% increase. And that's, a few years ago, there's a whole lot of that thing. And one guy, Forbes magazine guy who was editor, who was writing a commentary on how dysfunctional it is, he said, you know, if an insurance company has a claim for $50,000 for nursing home care, that they are responsible for. It's worth them spending $45,000 to fight it so they don't have to pay it. And of course, the person trying to get it, it's worth them spending $45,000 to try and get the $50,000. And we spend all these efforts trying to play that game. And that's just for one small portion, sizable, but a small portion of our healthcare system. Why don't we just make it simple? If we're covering it for 3/4 of the people, could save everybody's hassle that way. Could make it much more simple. Oh, one other thing I'm going to go back to on that one, dental care. With dental care, when I said we don't cover it through the Affordable Care Act, didn't even debate that. We do not, in this country, have separate insurance for your fingers and your toes, which you might suggest because you got numbers of them. It's got your teeth. Your teeth have as much of an impact on your overall health with infections and so on, hugely important to your health, and why do we treat that separately? Historically, we can understand, but why does that make sense? ought to cover everything you need, and chemical dependency treatment, I'd say, is one of the biggest ones. It's expensive to treat, but it's a lot more expensive to not treat. With mental health and chemical dependency, we're paying for it in our correctional system, we're paying for it with crime, we're paying for it in pain and suffering from other ways. Third principle that I would say any good healthcare system would do is you choose which doctors, which hospitals, which clinics you want to use. Somebody who has a complex condition has had a doctor for 20 years and oops, they're out of network, gotta switch to a new one. That's not helpful. It's painful for the system to go through that. Many doctors will say they've got a new patient comes into their plan, switches plans. They can have 10 medications and they have to rework it through again because new networks and new formularies and what drugs they do. But patients should be able to choose their own doctors and hospitals, and medical care should be decided by patients and their providers, not by government, not by insurance company, not by somebody else. I happen to think this is one I would say is very essential. The people and their providers are making the decisions what kind of care they want to get or not get. Next one would be you focus on reducing costs by cutting administration, not by denying care. Our proposal would block the system from denying care, save money in terms of delaying care, reducing quality of care, denying care. It has to be affordable to all, which means in our case, premiums should be based on income. Everybody should pay into it. If you can afford more, you should pay more. Focus on preventive care. This is very important. Our healthcare system, public health is an add-on. Lots of things, even nurses in public schools, that's an extra because it comes out of education budgets. If it's taking care of healthcare, maybe it should come out of healthcare budgets. We should have a logical system. Focus is on addressing public health and addressing not just tobacco use and obesity, but hundreds of other things. Next one, you need enough providers to avoid waiting lines. In our country, a lot of people never can get into a waiting line because they don't have coverage. Certain, most kinds of things are huge waiting lines, some like mental health, some like dermatology. There are waiting lines, significant ones, and a waiting line is evidence of insufficient number of providers. In the case what we're proposing in our proposal in Minnesota, would be requiring the health plan to make sure there are enough providers. How do you do that? We have a shortage everywhere in the country of general practitioners in the doctor level, family practice, internal medicine, pediatricians, gerontologists. We have a shortage of general practitioners. Too many specialists. Why? Well, if you go to University of Minnesota Medical School, which is a very good school, you probably end up with $250,000 of debt. If you're doing that, and you know I can get this job and get paid twice as much as I get paid as a general practitioner, maybe it's worth you going into that. And you do hear students saying, look, I feel I need to do that. So you tend to produce more specialists, which we have in many cases surpluses of, except in the ones like psychiatry where they pay less than general medicine. But you need to address it. How do you address it? Well, our proposed health plan would be easy. They got plenty of choices. They could negotiate with the medical schools and say, look, we'll buy down tuition or we'll repay student loans. If a student goes into the type of medicine we need, general practice, if they're willing to serve in the state, if they're willing to serve in certain communities, you make sure, right now I care to bet most in Minnesota, the Twin Cities, which is over half the population, doctors probably compensated better there, general practitioner there, than in Thief River Falls, small town in the far northwest. Well, if you can't get people to practice there, maybe you change it, maybe you negotiate higher pay in those communities. But one of the requirements of a healthcare system, it can't just be that healthcare is, quote, affordable to people. They have to have access to it. You have to have sufficient providers to avoid the waiting lines. This is Minnesota language for presentations I do in Minnesota, but Minnesota, and I'd say our nation, but we have some of the best medical care, some of the best medical training, some of the best research, some of the best technology. A lot of the medical technology industry started and is much of it's based in Minnesota. I'd say, for that matter, in healthcare in general, we have across the country some of the best doctors and providers in the world, some of the best research, some of the best facilities, some of the best other things. We just happen to have the we fritter that all away with the worst system of access in Medicare. So we're not trying to change. The point is, in doing that, you've got to make sure you maintain the good things you have, and that's essential. I don't think you'd call it a good system if it didn't do that. Next one may not be a concern to most people, but it is a fair one. Mm-hmm. Some of the Medicaid and Medicare sometimes pay doctors, providers, inadequate rates.
Correct.
Dental in Minnesota is outrageous. We can't get dentists to cover people who have dental coverage through Medicaid because they're paid to. You have to negotiate fair prices and pay in a timely manner. It's not okay. You can't run a business if you're going to pay people 6 months late. Final one is, I think this is one that our current system is so convoluted. When I first started getting these, this is not a bill, statements in the mail. Those who have been buying insurance for many years didn't used to get those. Well, why are you sending it to me, was my first reaction when you're saying, it's not a bill, why are you sending it to me? The whole system is very convoluted. People trying to understand it, trying to understand why some people are paying three times as much for something as others. There are 10-to-1 disparities that I've been able to find in various studies. 12-to-1 for a type of, I think it's hip replacement study out of Yale a couple of years ago, which was arguing what we think is going to help save money in healthcare is dysfunctional, and because you can't, the pricing is so strange. But you need a simple, understandable system. I think they're all important. I think we have to meet each of these. So you say, well, I can do two of these things. I don't think that hacks. I think if you're trying to design a healthcare system, you should try and design a healthcare system that works. There weren't any proposals out there I saw. I offered this, I said, in 2003. The legislation did not pass. I became chair of the health committee in 2008 and thought, well, 2007. And I thought, well, if nobody else has a plan to do it, I like those principles. I think we ought to design a healthcare system on it. And so we've got a proposal that would do that. It would be one that would be governed by those principles, focus on public health and well-being, not profits or politics, and medical decisions left to patient doctor. My premise earlier when I said the two types of reform we've done is one to bring down costs and bring up access. Instead of focusing on the costs, what if we tried starting this thing? What if we tried focusing on principles like this, on designing a healthcare system that makes sense? Start that way, because every reform we talk about, well, we could do a little bit of this, a little bit of this. That's where you get into the tinker. Mm-hmm. You say, what do we want? And some people may say, well, I don't think all those principles are that important. I don't think people need to choose their doctors. That's a legitimate point of view. I disagree with it, but I would argue all of those principles are reasonable. Biggest question then people becomes is, saves money. And it improves health. If you focus on getting people the care they need when they get it, need it, and focus on public health, you're going to improve health. They have a healthier population. What about the cost? That's the biggest issue you get. Well, everybody else, you just say, ignore the cost from it. Design a healthcare system that works. I happen to believe that doing it the right way actually may be less expensive. I don't know if any of you are from Colorado, but prior to the Affordable Care Act, this was 2007, Colorado had a health care access commission. We had one in Minnesota that was on at the time. They took a better approach, I think. Instead of saying, well, let's have some, we had a public health task force I served on, we had an insurance reform task force, we had a payment reform task force, all these little task forces, and we're going to fix the system that way. Colorado instead did basically what you might call a statewide RFP, saying, come on, we've got these problems of cost, the same two problems everybody says we have to reform, lack of access and too much cost. We need solutions. Give us your best idea. 24 different groups came forward with proposals on how they're going to fix the system. They whittled it down, a lot of plans were similar and so on. They whittled it down to four proposals, and I'm not going to go into big detail. This one and that one, I think the first three were in many ways very similar to the Affordable Care Act, which came a couple years later. But I took a 250-page report that they hired an economic consultant, health economics firm, a fairly well-respected one, to do an analysis of this. And they put out a 250-page report. I made this chart based on it, which some of the people in Colorado said, where did that chart come from? And I said, I made it. Well, what do you make it for? Well, I wanted to use it to explain what happens to my colleagues. So I made a chart, two columns, how many remain uninsured and what's the total cost to the healthcare system. Colorado at the time started just under 800,000 people were uninsured. It's a state of, I think, about 5 million people, so it was about where the rest of the country was in terms of number covered. This cut it almost in half. The second one cut it down 138, the next one 109,000. And the last one, which is a universal healthcare system, the word universal might tell you it doesn't take six digits. Covers everybody. So we get to the cost. This one was 600 million. The next one was a lot, but it's a very inexpensive one, relatively speaking, and it accomplished a lot. Third one was 1.3 billion, and actually, the universal had the biggest number of all, but it had a little minus sign in front of it. Think of what their two goals were, covering everyone, covering more people, and cutting spending. You look at what they came up with. One plan covered everyone. Only one plan saved money. In effect, only one plan worked. What did they do? They decided that the third to the fourth plan wasn't politically realistic. So instead of fighting for something that works, let's pick something that doesn't work and fight for that instead. That's not the way they phrase it, and I can say it's that's not really good marketing. There was actually a program in Duluth, Minnesota about 10, 15 years ago for people who had heart failure, and it was a very good way to cut their rehospitalization by 80%, save money, cut it by half. They call it their heart failure program. I thought they need marketing. The Colorado folks would not have framed it this way. They would have said, that's not feasible, so let's fight for something that is feasible. I'd say the Affordable Care Act was done in a similar way. Because I use the term single payer there, what's single payer there? My proposal would be that, I don't use the term a lot, because it's a system where the providers are paid by one entity, not multiple ones, insurance companies, government, businesses, individuals, where you're sending out hundreds of bills to everyone. One entity pays the bill, so you're paying that one entity to do it. I don't use the term because it's not very descriptive. If you buy a new car and I ask, what did you buy? And you say, well, dealer financed. And I say, well, what kind of car though? It doesn't tell me. Dealer financed. It's not very helpful, and most people may not know what it means because it's not a very descriptive term, and they know they love it or hate it, but they don't know what it is. So I don't use that term a lot, but that's the where you have one payer, one, it would be in a case like this, would be a publicly paid thing because who else would be doing it? There's no one entity everybody fights about who would. We all pay into it, and everybody benefits. My argument is it's the only way you're going to get universal health care in this country. The way our political system functions, the way money and politics talks, it doesn't work where you're going to tell insurance companies you have to do this, you're going to tell providers you have to do this, you're going to do this. It doesn't work because they're going to do it their own way and saying, in effect, we want a universal system, we do this. It has shown doing a universal health care system is actually cheaper, even though it covers everybody, even though it covers more things. The Colorado plan, did it cover dental? I couldn't tell you. I can tell you it was universal, and it was a comprehensive plan. Real world evidence also shows we spend twice as much on health care as other countries. I used that earlier. How do we compare? We do visit the doctor less than people in other countries. This chart, I don't know how well you can see it, this is number of doctor visits per person per year. This is 2, 4, 6, 8. We're at 4. Sweden, Mexico, it's hard to tell. I mean, it's different traditions on how people use medical care. Sweden is significantly less than us, but you know, some of those countries off the charts in terms of use, Japan, can't see it.
Korea.
Korea, okay. But some of those are off the charts, many times as many as we have. So it's not that we're going to the doctor every little thing. Some people do. We think we're doing a good job of stopping overuse. We're not really. Our health outcomes lag far behind. This is life expectancy. More years, better. The top one is Japan is over 83 years. Our country, this is in 2011 data, no, 2014, except Canada is 2011. But we're under 79 years. We do better than Slovak Republic and Hungary and Latvia and Mexico.
Wow. That's cheerful, right?
But I don't know that I'd say it shows we're doing that well. Another measure, infant mortality. Here you want less, obviously. This is the infant mortality per 1,000 live births. Iceland, 1 per 1,000. Pretty impressive there. We're not doing so well, but again, we do beat Mexico. But we're not doing that well. And we spend twice as much. This is 2012 numbers. I think all of these were 2012. Per capita spending in the US is about 8,400 at that time. And it would help because it's hard for my eyes on something like this, but half of that 84 is about 42. It falls in about right there. And I think you can count there about 7 or 8 or 9 that are more than half of what we spend. But even the outliers, Luxembourg, which is tiny, Switzerland, Norway, even those outliers are fully a third below where we are. I think it does. Simplicity. How do you make a system work in a logical way? Simplicity matters. I like to compare Medicare in 1965 and the Affordable Care Act in 2017. Back then we had file cabinets. We got computer technology. That was the best picture I could get of computer technology. Sorry about that. I'm not the best at the clip art stuff. They enrolled 18 million seniors in less than a year and a half. No computers, one plan for everyone. And in contrast, the Affordable Care Act, which was trying to get people insured, the main thing it added, forget about the Medicaid expansion for now, but the part that drew a lot of the most controversy, certainly in Minnesota and elsewhere, is should states set their own exchanges or not? And exchanges are basically a simple way for people who get their coverage other ways. If you haven't and you haven't been paying that much attention to the news, the best way to summarize what they are is an online shopping center for health insurance plans. That's all it is. You can buy your insurance through this online shopping center. You have to pick your insurance company, though. You have to pick an insurance plan from the company, in limited benefits depending on which plan you pick. Gold, silver, bronze plans, platinum plans. I would describe a lot of them more like tinfoil or worse than that, but a bronze plan covers 60% of your care, which means 40% is going to come out of pocket with deductible. They have different limiting networks, so you got to pick, well, if I want to have, I have at this doctor, I really need to see for this condition. Now they're out of network, you have to pick based on it, which made it very convoluted. And of course, a family trying to get coverage this way, every member of the family may have a different plan. One may be covered by work, maybe two by different jobs. One may be covered by a public program. Somebody may be whatever, every different qualification reason. And we have a lot of choices, though. This is Minnesota's exchange in, I think, 2016. Lots of different plans, few companies, but lots of different plans in them. And the reason I talk about the simplicity here is in Medicare signing up in 1965, 18 million people. In contrast, the exchanges after 4 years got about, I think, about 14 different, about 14 million people, less than 14, I think it was like 13 million people eventually got covered by the health insurance exchanges. And back in Medicare enrollments, that 99.9% of seniors, it cost 170 some million dollars to do today's dollars, inflation adjusted. a little less than a billion, 860, I think, some million dollars to enroll those 18 million seniors. The exchanges to get 13 million enrolled cost for all the setup and everything, about, I think it was about $8 billion. So about 10 times as much to enroll fewer people. But to make that worse, that 880 million that they spent to get people enrolled in Medicare, that didn't count just getting them signed up. It counted the administrative costs of paying their claims for the first year.
Wow.
Which is far bigger expense than just signing up. But again, that's where they didn't have computer technology. They were using file cabinets, paper documents, and they did it because it was a much simpler system. Why, how, when I say it saves money, and I can show you plenty of studies and so on that show it, to help explain the complexity of the system, what if we tried to compare it, what if schools were funded the way we fund hospitals? Apologize for the clip art, this was the best I could come up with. If we were to do that, if schools were funded by hospitals, education would change. 30, 40 minutes, maybe that's less than you need, I don't know. But at the end of every day, every teacher has to spend time calculating how much time they spent with each student, how much supplies they used. You know, the special ed students are going to take a lot more teacher time, so you got to figure that all out. Then you have to send it down to the billing office. And maybe some of your states have it. Minnesota does not have billing offices in our elementary schools. They need to allocate the overhead costs, factor it all in. Parents would have to buy school insurance plans because you've got to pay the bills. And because that's complicated and very expensive, we'd have employers competing for employees by offering school coverage to employees' children. School billing office, they have to send out bills each month. This is a highly inflated charge master price. If you haven't heard the charge master term, that's when hospitals use when you see bills that are 3-4 times or 20 times or whatever times what you think the item ought to cost. They put it through what they call a charge master system. And you got to have inflated prices because you have to negotiate with all the payers to bring it down, because if you're a school insurance plan, you don't want to pay full rates, you got to get your attract your members, so you negotiate it down. So they bill at highly charged rates, and then the school plans negotiate. However, you know, not everybody can afford school insurance, and so there's the ones who are stuck with the full price. You get health care and you're covered by insurance, your doctor visit may cost much less than somebody who doesn't have the care. If you don't have the insurance, if you don't have the insurance, you're gonna pay the full price, which you probably can't pay. And even some of the families who have school insurance can't afford the co-pays and deductibles, so you need not just a billing office, but a collections agency as well. There are lots of other complications. Not all teachers would be in the network. And if you try, because I think anybody who is getting surgery or something now, they're very careful. We made sure our son, who was covered by a North Carolina policy, was in Minnesota a couple years ago, and wanted to get surgery there. We double, triple checked, and we still spent a year trying to fight off the things that this wasn't supposed to be done that way. So they might be out of network, and you don't know who's out of network. Again, with anesthesiologists and so on, more and more, they learn, providers have learned, that's the way you can charge whatever you want. So it caused complications. How does this improve education, does it? No, it doesn't improve education. Obviously, the time teachers and administrators spend in administration instead of teaching is not a helpful thing. And some students would be denied education because they don't have a school plan or because they have to switch schools because of a change in plan. Would it save money? Of course not. What it would do, the only thing it would do about cost would be add this whole new bureaucracy, not only at the school, but also with each household, each employer, each insurance company, it adds a huge new bureaucracy. Here's a chart. This is a huge chart. This is actually a tripling of the number of physicians in the last 40 years. Health administrators, a little faster rate. That's why this had to be such a tight grid here. We are making our system not a health system, but one that bookkeepers and accountants, we need more bookkeepers, accountants, and folks than we need doctors, nurses, dentists, others. Minnesota Health Plan, I've been proposing because I think it's common sense. We had hoped to push it this year. Politics intervened. I'd say the unpopularity of the Affordable Care Act was a major cause. In Minnesota, our rates were one of the lower rates the first year of the health insurance exchange, and then they jumped by 20%, by 20 more percent or so the last year before the election. The numbers came out, and every single plan on the exchange went up by more than 50%. And my party, the one who had put in place the Affordable Care Act, was saying, well, you know, but it's a good system, we'll keep improving it. And Donald Trump and that party were spending a lot of time saying, this stinks, let's throw it out, let's start over. If you're desperate, if you're paying more for your health coverage than you're paying for your rent or your mortgage, saying we're going to keep working to improve this doesn't ring very solid argument for voting for somebody. I'm not pushing for it this year. Well, we are pushing for it, but we know it's not going to happen this year or next year. But I would argue that as the healthcare system becomes more dysfunctional, it actually, the last year has multiplied several fold over chances of something like this happening in the next few years. I think I quoted the other day, I used a quote, a pseudo quote, because he didn't really say it apparently, but Winston Churchill saying that the American people will always do the right thing after they've exhausted every other possibility. I'd argue we're at that stage now. My party keeps pushing the Affordable Care Act, it's good, it covered. I strongly supported parts of it and think it was worth doing because of that. It cut the number of uninsured in the country by about half. And now as things are being there to roll back, the biggest proposals are basically proposals in Washington right now are largely not changing healthcare as much as they're taking away, mainly Medicaid. Mm-hmm. Mainly Medicaid is where the big impact is, and it's mainly going to tax cuts. Mm-hmm. So that's the main shift that I would argue is happening. But when they talk about it could cause 24 million more people to lose their insurance, to get a sense of why, I said earlier, I think things are going to get worse. But let's keep in mind that what we've got now isn't that good because there are about that many people right now, 10% of the population, that doesn't have coverage now. And I'll bring it back to, I think that goes back to what we were talking about with Shane at the beginning. I don't think 24 million people, I don't think 10 million people uninsured is something 30 some other countries have it. Again, you can download it by hook if you want to see it, mnhealthplan.org when you get back home. And with that, I'll turn on the lights and see questions, comments, or whatever. Oops, wrong one. There. Yes.
John. When you were talking about the Colorado plans, you said that it was deemed not feasible. What was the standard for feasibility? Was that
politically approval or? Politically, you couldn't pass it. That's the biggest argument. When I introduced my proposal, it was 2000, very end of 2007, and it wasn't really refined until 2008, 2009. I had a lot of colleagues, we love to have that, but you know, it's not going to happen. That's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you say it's not going to happen, it won't happen. I guarantee you it won't happen. The only way you have a chance is pushing it. But that's what they meant by not feasible. By the way, they didn't actually say that. They just didn't say, we want to do this. Mm-hmm. They decided not to decide because that one wasn't going to happen. And Affordable Care Act, I'd argue the same thing. Yes?
So this is kind of obvious, maybe. Who loses in a universal health plan like this, and how much power do they have right now?
That's a good question. The politics of it. There are lots of folks who do. And I don't think when you talk about an issue like this, you got to recognize that there can be, for a lot of people, pain caused by it. The billing infrastructure goes away. In Minnesota, one estimate was to be about 40,000 jobs. That's a lot of jobs. We our economy in Minnesota, every month, the job we turn over is about 155,000, so about four times as much in any month. I think the last year or 2 years ago, it was 155,000 people left the job every month. Some cases layoffs, some cases being fired, some cases retiring, most cases switching jobs. 157,000 a month were new job starts each month, so it was a growing economy at the time. But there are times in a recession year, if there are 155,000 job losses a month, they might have only 154,000 or so. But it's about one fourth of the number of turnover would be people losing their jobs. I think the points you have to make about it is we have an obligation. Our Minnesota Health Plan proposal would be required, legally required. It's a be a quasi-governmental entity. In other words, they'd have to apply these principles and legal requirements they'd have to do. One of them is they would have to be providing job dislocation benefits, worker retraining to people. And that's very expensive. But I'd argue it'd be more, it'd be still, that's the right thing to do, and I think we have an obligation to. I'd argue it'd be cheaper if we just paid the people who are in billing to sit at their desks and do nothing than it is to pay them the way we do now because of the huge cost of the system. But that's, but there are many. Pharmaceutical industry, you know, you talk about the EpiPens. I don't know how much they cost to produce, but they're now $600 and we're supposed to throw them out every year and a half, and our son uses one, has one, and that's obscene. Mm-hmm. I mean, the one guy, Martin Shkreli or whatever, who took the one drug, and he saw that there were very low stockpiles of it around the country, bought up the company. He was not a pharmaceutical guy or anything, and just jacked up the price tenfold or whatever. Most hated businessman in the country, they were saying at the time. But we've got a system that works that way, and last year, a group that was trying to educate legislators in Minnesota, a good group of people, it was some medical field people, some insurers, some academics, and so on. They were trying to educate legislators on health policy. And I didn't attend the thing they had, but they sent out an email afterwards, and they were using one of the things that they talked about, things driving costs, things that are going to make the system worse, aging population. Well, it's not hard to figure out. They said, but new technologies and new pharmaceuticals and stuff are driving up costs too. And they said they may do wonderful things. And they used the example of Sovaldi, which is, I think that's the name of the drug for hepatitis C. And they quoted a New York Times article on it saying that if we were to provide Sovaldi to everybody in the country with hepatitis C, it's the only drug that cures hepatitis C. It's cheaper than liver, than transplants and everything else, but not much anymore. It's $84,000 to get a whatever the course of treatment is, like a month's worth of treatment or something. $84,000, and they said if we were to make that available, Scoop's trying to educate legislators. If we're going to make that available in our current system, that would drive up the average person's premium by about $200 to $300 per year for the next 4 or 5 years, by which time we would have presumably have roughly wiped out hepatitis C. That's a lot of money for one thing. And they're saying, see, that's why we can hardly fix this problem. Well, there are other places you can buy Sovaldi for $900, not $84,000, $900 in other countries. You're not losing money doing that. There have been several analyses that figure it costs about $150 to prepare that much, so they're making, and they should make a good profit off it. And $900 for a $150 thing, it works. They wouldn't be selling it in those countries at that price if they weren't making a good profit off it. $84,000, you've got a system that's dysfunctional, and so those are the folks, they'd be losing money. Pfizer, in my book I quote, I think 3 years ago, 2 years ago, Pfizer's profit was 40% profit margin. Pfizer blew away the others that year, but 40% pharmaceutical, big pharmaceutical manufacturers are way up there if you look at Dow Jones, Industrial Average, Standard & Poor's, any of them. You look at the profit margins, return on investment, drug companies are good investments. They would lose some because you're going to negotiate fair prices. Sorry for the long answer, I'm trying to be quicker.
Just a comment. So it seems to me as I'm just listening here, It's really about greed.
Yes.
And a small group of, or a small population of people who feel like they deserve more money than others. Mm-hmm. And if we take care of that fundamental thought of one deserves more than the other, maybe it can reduce it. And I don't know.
Right. Well, human nature is what human nature is, and frankly, most of us would like to feel we should get paid more for whatever we do, because what we do is so valuable. I mean, that's a human nature type of thing, but your point is very legitimate. We have decided that healthcare, and when people say let the market work, that's a little bit problematic, because I think top 1% of healthcare consumers, I don't call them consumers because they're people, and this is not something you want to consume. I think most of us like to consume less. Yeah. But the top 1%, I think they use more healthcare by a long shot than the bottom 50% of the population. And those folks who, in other words, they're using more than 50 times as much. And in that case, if those people are the wealthiest folks and best able to afford it, the market would work. But it doesn't work that way. Most of the people who need that, many of them can't work at all. And the ability to pay, it just doesn't work. But so greed, yes, there's certainly greed. And the system facilitates that. Every time you see some new business startup in healthcare, you can't say they're doing a bad thing. We've got a new company in Minnesota that helps. Now they work with employers only. But they will take an employer and for a fixed amount per month, they will go over everybody's medical bills. So when your employer plan, every bill you get, the employer sends it to this company and they catch mistakes in it. And they can save you huge. I mean, it's amazing how many mistakes there are. And you try and figure out a bill, right? It doesn't work. So it's a decent business. It's a reasonable thing. They're helping people. But again, that's more dollars in the healthcare dollars that are going for something other than providing healthcare. Over there and then here and then we'll go here. Yes?
Yes, I was worried. In some states, at least, when you want to choose a physician, we have discovered that only some will accept Medicare. Mm-hmm. And that, so, because they want to charge more, and yet they may be the ones that can actually meet your needs the best. Is under your system or in your thoughts, is there some way where you can level the playing ground?
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I think if you want quality healthcare, I think you want to have a universal system where everybody has access to the same quality. If you say, well, we're going to do this, but you can buy a separate system on the side, which a number of European countries have. You can buy a private plan on the side to cover your things because you want better care. We'd be saying, no, you can't sell insurance for these things. And frankly, part of the reason you make sure when people, oh, this is going to take doctors' incomes down to here or whatever, there are going to be people who are getting cuts and whatever. They're going to have less administrative costs and so on as well. But there's some who are going to get paid less. As I said earlier, if you're providing care in an underserved specialty, or underserved community, or other, you'll be getting more. But having a logical system for it, you want to make sure that the wealthiest CEO, that if they're in the same plan as you are, they're going to make sure it's a good plan. Minnesota Health Plan Board is legally required to meet these principles under this proposal. They would, their families are covered by it too. It's not like we get better. I mean, people have always said, and Congress actually did change their thing because people were beating them up so hard on, well, you guys get a quality plan, you're giving us the leftovers. And I think that the same plan that the CEO, that the President of the United States, that members of Congress, everybody else gets, is what every person gets.
So you would then, so that everybody, all doctors would be, if you're going to work in that state or in
right.
the nation, you would, this is what you get paid.
Right, and if the system is negotiating, and it is a negotiating process, if you're negotiating and you're driving it too low, especially if you're trying one state, physicians will move elsewhere. Mm-hmm. In Saskatchewan, when they started a universal plan in mid-early 1960s, doctors were up in arms about it. And I think most physicians in Canada now are pretty happy with the system. And when they looked at what their neighbors to the south have in terms of administrative time, just the new quality measures, there's a study out a year and a half ago, I think, about doctors' time spent on quality measures. because the Affordable Care Act had huge new quality measures. Average physician in the study showed 2.6 hours per week additional time spent filling out paperwork for quality. Their staff, that was their time. The staff time was another 12 some hours. Almost 15 hours per week per physician just to report on quality. They said that 2.6 hours for the average physician is 9 more patients per week. So yes, but you want to make sure it's a fair payment system.
Exactly.
And you want to make sure it's paid on a timely basis. But yes, right now, a lot of the public programs, the reason that's one of the legal requirements is because people can rightly say Medicaid doesn't pay enough, or in some cases, Medicare doesn't pay enough. Yes, you in the front row, then over here. So.
Could you speak to the current situation going on in the federal situation right now in
sure.
regards to your opinion about the situation with Affordable Care?
Okay. By the way, just so there's a cutoff time, I'll suggest 12:20. I think this, I wasn't sure if this was hour and a quarter, whatever I was supposed to tell them, but I did. So we'll say 12:20, and if you have to leave before then, fine. Affordable Care Act, you could tell, I think, in my presentation, I'm not thrilled with it, but taking away coverage from people who have it is a disaster. It's interesting because I think when President Trump said, who knew healthcare was so complicated? He probably was the only person in the country who didn't think it was complicated. And I'm sure in a few weeks he'll tell us he's the only one who's got it figured out. But, you know, when you look at what they've been talking about, they vilify the Affordable Care Act to the point they have to get rid of it in some way or another. That's why they're now at the point of, well, maybe just repeal and don't replace. Or we'll replace it, but we need 2 years to think about it. And the difficulty is because it really was the concept of the Affordable Care Act came actually the one place it had been implemented before this was in Massachusetts under a Republican governor named Mitt Romney. Mm-hmm. In fact, the best description of the Affordable Care Act came from Minnesota's former governor, Tim Pawlenty, when he was running for president in 2012, and he called it Obamany Care. Partly because one of his rivals in the race was Mitt Romney, and he wanted to tie Obama and Romney together. And that didn't work. He backed out of saying it face-to-face to Romney in a debate, and then a week later he was out of the race, supporting Romney, and he never used the term again. But it came from the Heritage Foundation, a conservative foundation. It's an insurance-based model, and I don't think it's a great one, but the fact that Republicans in Congress say how bad it is, what they're proposing, and some of the proposals to do to Medicare, mm-hmm. is take it away from a universal system and make it, you know, Affordable Care Act type of thing where we provide subsidies for people to do it and so on. They're basically saying, well, we want to make Medicare like the Affordable Care Act, but we don't want to call it that because we hate that. I don't think what they're doing is going to be helpful in any way. One of the proposals in Minnesota, which is similar to what they're doing there, is saying we're going to allow you to sell insurance at a lot less solid benefits. Well, you can, if you don't have cancer, you don't have to pay for cancer. If you don't want this, you don't pay for this. And so you're buying a policy that may cover you, may not. I'm very worried about what's going to happen. That, to me, is the biggest urgency right now. Over here, I had a lot of hands. Yes?
Yeah. Kind of, this makes sense to me. Why haven't we gone to Europe and looked at their systems that work? I know there's some problems. I am familiar with the Finnish system because they've got relatives and so forth. There's some waiting times and so forth. But they have a system that seems to work. We haven't even looked that way or tried to model.
People who like the current system, people who profit from the current system, don't want to look elsewhere. They don't want to float the idea. Somebody here mentioned to me in the last day or two, a TRB reporter did a documentary for PBS about 10 years ago, and he wrote a book, Sick Around the World and Now Sick in the U.S. or something like that, talking about various systems. You can actually go online to PBS's Frontline and see his, I think it was called Sick Around the World, and Taiwan actually did what you're saying one should do. They sent, Taiwan was becoming an industrialized country, a wealthy country. They decided we want a better healthcare system. So they actually sent teams of people around the world to figure out what works and what doesn't work. And in many ways, they designed a very good system. I'd argue there's some flaws in it, but they looked at what worked and what didn't work. Somebody asked them, well, what you get from the United States is, well, there wasn't really anything we could copy. And not trying to say it as an insult to the U.S., but to say there's no system here. How do you get your coverage? Well, it is. How do you get your coverage? And there's no system. It's totally haphazard. I think we ought to do, that's what we tried to do with this Minnesota Health Plan. We tried to look at what works, what doesn't work. One of the things Taiwan did wrong was it's kind of funded out of taxes, so the government kind of, well, we don't want to raise this, so they starve the system too much. And I don't think you want that either. But again, we're spending 17% of our economy now on healthcare. Warren Buffett told Berkshire Hathaway folks 3 months ago, he described healthcare as the tapeworm of the American competitive economy. He says, a lot of my business colleagues complain about the fact that corporate taxes, I mean, that's 2% of the economy. This is 17%. And he actually pointed out it grew from 5% to 17% in the last 50 years, and the estimates are it will be 20% of the economy by 2025. He's saying that's just crushing every business here. So we have to, over there, a couple more back there.
Do you have a pie chart of the cost, you know, that says this is where the money goes?
There are plenty of charts like that. Again, a lot depends on state by state. You'll often hear pharmaceutical industry will tell you that pharmaceuticals are only 10% of the healthcare dollar, but that's the pharmaceuticals that you or I might buy, not the pharmaceuticals dispensed by a doctor in a hospital, in a clinic, and things like that. That actually brings it up closer to 20%. So that's a huge growing portion of it. And again, a lot of our healthcare costs are hidden other ways. And I mean, one of the things that a logical system does is you take away the fights over who pays the bills when you're in the car and you're in an auto accident or you're injured on the job. You go for back, I get back surgery. You go in for anything related to your back. You have to fill out a questionnaire. Were you in an auto accident? Were you this? Did this injury happen at work? And then they all spend all their time fighting over it and denying it. Well, actually, by covering it this way, you really bring down the cost. Anyway, over there. Yes?
I'm on Medicare, so I went on just about the time the Affordable Care Act started. So I'm deeply thankful for Medicare. It has really been so far good for me, and I've got a lot of things to deal with. But as we talk about all this, you know, all these little details, which are important, seems to me can be worked out if we agree on one principle. And your principles allude to it, but we have to really agree on, is healthcare a right or a privilege? And we're treating it like it's a privilege, right, not a basic right.
Right.
So how do we get that discussion solidified?
Yeah. That's a very, did everybody hear that? Okay, I think that gets to the core of this whole thing. Maybe we could suggest that the debate on the Affordable Care Act, not in the last 8-9 years, but in 2008, 2009, 2010 when it passed, really was about that. Do we think healthcare is something everybody should have? Obama's rhetoric in his campaign and so on was healthcare is a right, everybody should have it. Proposal he put forward doesn't do that, but in other words, we sort of had a discussion, and the country sort of decided, yes, it should be a right. We're not doing it, but it should be a right. So I think that's a very important one to do. And to your point about we see it as an individual thing, I do tell a story in the book, but I'll real quickly relate it here. And that is, we think of healthcare as something as our own responsibility. Minneapolis Star Tribune, Minnesota's biggest paper, they have on Sundays, they have a big feature story. July of 2011, they had a big feature story about parents of a kid who had very severe mental health problems, and they were trying to get help for the kid, and several pages of interview and so on. And they told how at age 2 or 3, the kid took the kitchen knives and was slashing all the upholstery. They had to hide kitchen knives from a 3-year-old because he was so troubled. All through the kids growing up there trying to get him help. And the interview talks about how the mom said, well, we were thrilled a couple years ago we got him into an inpatient program. He really needed it. They were horrified 12 days later. The kid got kicked out of the program, ostensibly because he pulled a fire extinguisher off the wall and sprayed the staff with it. she didn't think that sounded like a very good reason for it, because one, this is a program for very severely mentally ill kids, and number two, the staff were saying sometimes that's a breakthrough moment with the kid. She found out a few days later the real reason she thinks they kicked him out was because the parents' insurance covered 10 days inpatient. On the 12th day, they learned he had only 10 days coverage. They kicked him out. They talked about how they tried one thing after another. When you read the story, the first reaction you have, it's back to the point you were saying about how we view healthcare. First reaction, I'm glad my kids aren't in that shape. I'm glad we're not fighting that fight. Second reaction is you feel very sorry for her and her family. The reason I tell this story that way is because the reason it was the front page story in the Star Tribune is that's the kid who went out and killed two convenience store clerks in Iowa. And all of a sudden it hits you in the gut and you get the sense maybe that's our problem.
Yeah.
Maybe it's all of our problem. Maybe we're all better off. And it's not much consolation to anybody that the kid in prison is now getting the mental health care his parents were trying to get him for their whole life. So that gets exactly to the point. Healthcare is, in our mind, as you said, what we think of it as something you're responsible for, it's your obligation, you've got to do it. And the reality is, we're in this together. And just like with education, well, I want my kids to get a good education. Well, you know, if you're going to be hospitalized at some point, the staff in the hospital, maybe some other school district, and maybe you want them to have a good education too.
Well, I would just underscore what you're saying about the urgency of this. I read a fascinating article a couple of months ago about the relationship between uncertainty in policy and insurance rates.
Yeah.
And the longer we debate and the more policy is uncertain, so insurance companies don't know what they're going to be dealing with, the more they hike the rates. And so that's some of why it's escalating so severely.
That is one of the reasons it is. And matter of fact, Minnesota insurers put out their rates for next year, and they were not as bad as I think many had hoped, partly because the state put most of $1 billion into buying down the rates for this 5% of the market. But you're right. Uncertainty is not a helpful thing to anybody trying to figure out prices for things. And so this whole debate convolutes it. But my argument is I don't want to wait three more decades to fix this. I don't think we should have to wait. And the reason I use that comic strip about this guy named Shane is because, you know, that tells us why there's an urgency here. When I contacted the cartoonist and asked if I could borrow it, I said, I really want to use this for some things in writing and presentation. He said he thought it would be a good tribute to Shane.
So given, in light of all that, what are two or three strategic things that we can do now?
That's always the good question, how we do it. What I'm trying to encourage people in Minnesota to do is start getting them active and educating themselves, each other, and others. And I think there's a growing number of Minnesota nurses are heavily involved in that. I think a lot of physicians are working on it, trying to get more groups to see the urgency. The first thing, most urgent single thing to do right now, I would argue, is to be contacting members of Congress, U.S. Senate and House members, urging them not to take away something with no replacement, and urging them not to see this as somebody's fault that they are struggling with an illness, and take care of your, just buy insurance. Well, where are you going to buy insurance? Well, we'll make it cheaper. How? By not covering what you need covered. Tell them to speak out on that. That's number one. Number two, I'm trying to pitch, don't let what they're doing, Republicans are doing in Washington, happen. On the other thing, I'm trying to convince Democrats, instead of saying, hey, the Affordable Care Act is so good, let's just get back to that. Well, we're still at that. If there are problems, the Shane was not killed by the new stuff. Shane is killed under the current system, and so I'm trying to say, people, you got to believe in it. You got to spell out what you're for. And I've been trying to meet with people around the country, get folks in other states to be looking at similar types of ideas to this. So we have, like I said, 20 after, so we got a couple more minutes.
Just really quickly, I just wonder, when you did the cost analysis, did that include the fact that people who are healthy are more productive?
I haven't done cost analysis myself, but that often is one factor. It's one factor I would argue you should take into account. I would argue none of the cost analysis in this country have covered those things. The cost of more productive employees, which is every employer's benefit, cost of reduced corrections cost. Mm. Prison costs are huge and growing. You address chemical dependency issues through the healthcare system instead of the prison system, you save buckets of money. Out-of-home placements of kids, human services costs, adjusting child abuse, child neglect, getting kids into foster care, huge expense. Vast majority of those kids have parents who are suffering from chronic mental health and chemical dependency problems. You address them. Addressing those problems doesn't mean everybody, nobody has chemical dependency problems, nobody has mental health problems. We cut the numbers significantly. So it's a good point. All those are other factors. We got the governor to put in $500,000 in his budget last year to try and fund an analysis of this proposal versus what we've got. And in the legislation, we very clearly said we want to study all those things. In other words, I don't want that. Just, we'll figure out one or two things. This is the big picture.
On the state and federal level, how much of an impact do you think that Citizens United and gerrymandering will have on actually coming up with a good system?
I'm doing a talk tomorrow on the impact of money in politics, and I would say that's probably the biggest single factor. If we're deciding this kind of proposal, this is rad, who's going to support this? Bernie Sanders had a similar type of thing. I don't think he articulated as clearly what he wanted it to be, but was designed to be a universal system like this. There was a Gallup poll last year, before the election, a year and a half ago, a year and a quarter ago, and it said 50% of the American public would support a single-payer plan like this, publicly financed universal system, privately delivered system. And among Republicans, about twice as many supported switching from the Affordable Care Act to that as keeping the Affordable Care Act. That's not a lot of people. It was only 18-20% of Republicans like the Affordable Care Act. The other 80% get rid of it. But of that chunk, about 40% actually said, well, we should do this, a Medicare-like system. So there's popular support for it out there. That's the money in politics is what blocks it from happening. I mean, why do we have in this country that when we got Medicare Part D in 2003 or so, that why do we have it that we're going to buy, federal government basically said, we're going to buy the prescription drugs that our senior population needs. Okay, folks, tell us how much you want to charge us. We're not allowed to negotiate with you, so just tell us what you want to charge us. I mean, how has that happened? Well, Billy Towles, the congressman who put the bill together, leaves Congress a week later, takes $1 million-a-year job with Pharma. Money in politics is corrupting in that sense, so it's the number one obstacle. I'm going to talk some about that tomorrow. One last one, it's 19 after. Yes?
I think you should recognize people here that some of the support and concern that we're talking about, as important as it is not seen by the population. It's anything like my family. I have 5 children, 15 grandchildren, and 4 of those 5 children are taken care of very, very well. The other one doesn't keep stable employment. So no wonder. The 15 grandchildren the same way. And I go to the VA. And health care fantastic within the family. So the realities aren't as real in an awful lot of families, so not a strong booster at a small percent.
Right. But again, when you look at young folks here, I mean, Holden's been having a big trouble getting volunteers here. They're begging for more. One of the sources has been young people in the middle of college who can't afford it, right after college, their student debt and everything else they can't. And the number one thing I know my kids, if by the time they turn 26, they've got to find something to provide some benefits. And to me, the idea of, Peace Corps or other things, Lutheran Volunteer Corps or other things right after college, a lot of people is kind of, they're scared because not only they have student debt, but how are we going to cover our health care? Anyway, it's 20 after. I want to thank you for coming.